When gradually one will give up these things precisely because one will swim in the sea of nectar delight. It is like a child. Child gets in the beginning tremendous joy while he eats sand and clay, mud and so forth. Then afterwards, even if you force him, he will not eat it because he knows the real food, bread and other things. Then when he starts eating proper food, he does not eat those things which he took when he was a little child. So here in the process of evolution, people go through this vital life, emotional life, lower vital life. Then when they pray and meditate, they enter into higher realities. There they get tremendous joy, peace, light and bliss. Then they give up. But until they get that inner peace, inner light, inner bliss, naturally they will try to go through the inhuman process, whatever they get on the way.
So that means you can't have a repressive personality unless you have the inner feeling.
Right. Repression is not good. It is gradual illumination. Suppression, repression, these things are not good. Gradual illumination. The child, when he grows up, he gets inner illumination. Then he stops eating the things that when right. he was a little child.
Is that not close to the Freudian idea of experiencing all things, and at the end there's a kind of renunciation because you know exactly what everything is?
The thing is that here we don't renounce actually, only we go to higher world. We transform it. And Freudian theory is totally different. There he sees the lower vital life, sex life, even in a little child.
Yes.
At the age of 3, 4, and he feels, according to his philosophy, that the whole world is dominated by the sex force. Our philosophy is that the whole entire world is dominated by God's will. And when we pray and meditate, we become more conscious of God's will. So here is the difference. Our case, we are seekers. We feel it is God's will that operates in and through us. According to our receptivity, we fulfill him.
Now that gets down to a very interesting question of the absolutes. Aren't you saying inferentially that certain parts of creation in the absolute sense are improper or crass or low life, and others are not?
No, here I want to say that we are growing from light to more light, abundant light, infinite light. We don't want to say from darkness we are entering into light. We are saying that this room has more light than the other room, adjacent room. Then there will be another room which has even more light, brighter light than this room. Uh-huh. So if we get a brightest room, then why should we stay in a bright room? We should try to stay in the brightest room.
You can also be blinded by light though sometimes.
But the thing is, it is only electric light that blinds. The spiritual light does not blind. In inner peace, light and bliss, will never be harmful. Here, anything we take to the extreme, we suffer from it. Here, but in the inner world, the more you get, the better for you, because those things are not harmful anyway. Peace, light and bliss, if you can enjoy in infinite measure, you will never suffer from it.
Okay, now, I read that a follower of Krishnamurti felt that he had been invaded by a magician, a black magician. Do you believe in personal powers of darkness that actually have personality?
They do have personalities, and I do believe in these wrong forces, adverse forces. They do exist, but ultimately it is the divine force that wins.
Can these forces be a catalyst for spiritual uplift? Can they help you to be redeemed, these powers of darkness?
How can power of darkness will help you? It is like your enemy. Will you ever think of your enemy helping you? Enemy is enemy. Enemy will only try to destroy you. So dark force, there is constant battle going on between dark forces and the divine forces, divine and undivine. So now you are on the side of the divine. Now the undivine force will try to destroy you. But in your case, you will try, being the divine force, you will try to illumine them. The divine force does not destroy the undivine forces. They only illumine them. Whereas the undivine forces try to destroy the divine force, which is absurd.
Are these creatures, are they capable of coming back to to divinity and renouncing evil.
Certainly, they are capable, and that is God's vision. That whatever is these evil forces, they are right now in ignorance. They are forces of ignorance. So ignorance is eventually going to be transformed. So okay. They will definitely be transformed. It is like a naughty boy. How long a boy can remain naughty? 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, or 20 years. Then he gets some blows from life. Then he turns it over a new leaf.
He learns.
He learns and he becomes a good.
Okay, now in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna says, "I shall not fight." That's how it begins, and then he ends up learning that it's his role to fight. If I may sum up the Bhagavad Gita in three sentences, I hope you won't regard that as audacious. Now, are there absolute acts that are absolutely no good, like fighting or, you know, atrocities of some kind, rape, you know? Are there acts that absolutely are no good, that have no purpose at all? I mean, Arjuna ends up at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, he's going to go out and kill people.
Arjuna's case, Arjuna was at that time attached to his relatives, his uncles, nephews, and all this. So here, the Lord Sri Krishna said to him, if you lose, no harm. You have fought for a good cause. You will be able to go to heaven. And if you fight against these forces are already destroyed. In the 11th chapter, he showed them, Sri Krishna showed them, that they are already inside him. They are all destroyed. You just become an instrument. In the inner world, they are already destroyed. Only in the outer world, Arjuna became the instrument to fight against these wrong forces. Now, we have to know for what cause. If somebody fights against the enemy to save his country, to save his parents, to save his dear ones, and while fighting, if he has to kill or destroy others, in his case, he is justified because he is saving his dear one, near ones. But then comes, in the case of Arjuna, Sri Krishna was the Lord. Lord says, I have already destroyed them. It is your own attachment. I want you to establish the kingdom of heaven, as the Christ said, the kingdom of heaven. Here, righteous people, good people, nice people should live on earth. Bad people, I gave them chance time and again, but they are not listening to me. So there comes a time when a naughty boy does not listen to his parents, he is forced. But before that, the parents plead with him. Or Sri Krishna pleaded with the Kauravas, Arjuna's enemies, that please don't fight, and just give them the little portion they deserve, rightly deserve. They said that, no, we will not give you even the point of a needle, land, I won't give you. Then there is nothing, there is no option, so he had to fight.
So
Arjuna encouraged them.
So you're saying in this life there is justice, social justice that can be understood by any man?
Everything can be understood provided one listens to the inner dictates. If one listens to the inner dictates, then there one can justify. Otherwise, fighting for the sake of fighting is very bad. But if it comes to a point, if suppose some country attacks your country, America, and America will remain asleep thinking that, you know, fighting is very bad. No, America will fight, and America will protect the country, its own mother. It is a birthright. It Americans are born here in America. There is a special mission they have on earth to do. And if they are attacked for self-defense, they will fight. And while for self-defense, if they kill their enemies, they are justifiable.
Okay.
But and again, if they go there on their own and then want to show their supremacy all over the world, and because they are the most powerful, then it becomes bad again.
Right. Aren't there certain situations that are so morally complex with so many things on both sides that there isn't any clear issue? How does a person find a right action in a situation like
that? Yes, that is spirituality's answer. We pray and meditate. Then we get an inner voice, inner command. At that time, we keep our mind shut. This moment, the mind will say that fighting is very bad. Next moment, the mind will say, no, tit for tat. They are fighting and we have to fight. So with our mind, we cannot come to any solution. But with our oneness heart, with the higher reality, we can feel what God wants. Let thy will be done. That we can say only when we remain inside the heart, but not while we are inside the mind. Mind will all the time contradict its own thoughts, ideas, achievements. Oh. This moment I am a very bad man, next moment I am a very good man, and the third moment I say, who am I to say that he is a bad man or a good man?
Well, you know, it's odd because So many people in history have conducted holy wars and claimed that God told them to do it. And in Euripides, anytime anybody does anything really horrible, he always says, I was possessed by a god. You know, it suggests that spirituality and recourse to the spirit can be a very treacherous and confusing business.
Absolutely true. In the name of religion, in the name of truth, most of the religions have fought against one another. You are so right. But now here you have to say, we have to feel that more than religion, there is something. That is our oneness with God.
That is true.
Now if we sincerely pray, if we sincerely meditate, then will you not listen to the dictates of our inner being, of the soul? If you are really good, really kind-hearted, really sincere, really devoted and spiritual, is it not His duty, God's duty, to guide us and to illumine us? But if you don't need His light, don't want His light, naturally, if you feel that if what we know is by far the best, then we enter into these problems.
Okay. Now, I'd like to change the subject a little bit to music. There's a woman in England by the name of Rosemary Brown, and she claims that she's been inspired by Franz Liszt, Beethoven, Schubert, a whole lot of people of the 19th and 18th centuries, and she transcribes these pieces, and they really seem to be out of her talent and range. Do you think that it's possible for masters who are not part of this life anymore to...
Inspire.
Yes.
It is quite possible. If she is receptive, then the masters who are not in the physical, master musicians, then if she is receptive, then the souls of these master musicians can come and help her, inspire her, guide her, because we belong to one family. Now only the people who are dead, who are not with us, are staying only in another room. Now we don't see them. But that room is not open to us. We don't have a free access to them. But they have an access to our room. So in the inner world, in a subtle body, from the inner world, in a subtle body, they can come and inspire us. So it's quite possible.
Now you're getting to something that is very, very interesting. What is it in people that makes them a receptive husk for inspiration? Some people I know are very, very clever and they don't have any gift, they have no talent, whereas other people are less clever and they have a gift. And could you give us an idea of the mechanics of being inspired, of the receptivity, the passivity that accepts these things?
Yes. Now here we have to believe in God's grace, God's compassion. Now some people are talented, which is while others are not. Now here we have to know that some people are wise. Now you see, if it is raining, what do? Raining heavily, cats and dogs, you keep the windows and closed. If it is early in the morning, if the sun rises, some people are fast asleep. They don't open their eyes. And if they see the sun, they close their eyes deliberately. While others, you know, get up and they do their morning, they go, they're ready for their office. And so it's how you use the grace. The sun came as grace. And now we are not utilizing sun's grace.
So it's always there
all
for
is
us.
There with, all is there for us. Some will utilize it for the right purpose, while others will not utilize it at all. And some misuse it.
Okay, now, some people have personal masters, you know, like Franz Liszt to Miss Brown. But as I've heard, as one becomes higher in the spiritual world, one becomes increasingly impersonal, a part of divinity. Can one be inspired as well by the more impersonal masters of music?
Certainly. We have to know that God is both personal and impersonal. Now, you are personal and impersonal. Now, you, as a human being with arms, legs, eyes, and you are personal. But inside you is tremendous energy, tremendous joy, tremendous love. This is impersonal. You can't show your love. It is all inside you. You can't show your peace. It is inside. It is in impersonal form, liquid form. But you have solid strength, your arms, eyes, and everything. So this moment, if I enter into you, I see you are all impersonal. When I am looking at you, you know, face to face, and with my human eyes, then you are personal. So when we try to feel, perceive a reality with our inner organs, let us say, simplicity, sincerity, purity, humility, and other qualities, mm-hmm. divine qualities, we immediately enter into the impersonal aspect of life.
Now, are there some times when you play that you are better than other times? Are you more smart?
Absolutely true. That is always, it happens every day. We can't get most delicious food. We want to eat every day most delicious food, but unfortunately we don't get it. So here also music also, sometimes we are really inspired, extremely inspired, sometimes we are not, but the only thing, there is a general standard. If one is a good cook, then he will cook something which may not be most delicious, but it is eatable.
Hmm. Now, you say that you're in a state of meditation when you play on the Esraj. To what state are you in a state of meditation? I mean, it's not the state of samsari, sartori, Ramakrishna, where you're completely out of it, right? It's some halfway house, no?
Yes, it is. I have to be very frank with you, it is not my highest. But the only thing is that it is, when I meditate or contemplate while playing the music, I bring down from above, on the strength of my inner aspiration and inner realization, peace, light and bliss in boundless measure for the audience. Now again, among the audience, there are some people who are extremely receptive, while others are not. And there are others who just cannot tune in with the peace, light and bliss that we bring down. So they just leave the place.
Could I ask you this? Who are your favorite composers in the West?
All are my favorite. In my case, you know, I know very little of it. And it is like, you know, sometimes a piece of Beethoven will inspire me, sometimes Bach. There is no fixed one. And it depends on my own mood, not it depends on their creation. Means it depends on my own sense of receptivity. You know, if I'm in a particular state of consciousness, then I enjoy one particular musician more than the others. Again, if my consciousness is different, say, then I enjoy somebody else. For me, there is no fixed musicians.
Now, when you're inspired, is the condition of being inspired like a light passing through a filter or a prism? I mean, how would you describe this feeling?
In my case, when I'm inspired, it is like a bird that is flying in the sky of infinity and eternity. The wings are spread wide all over, and it is flying in the sky of infinity.
All right.
Now, I consider myself at that time a bird.
That's wonderful. I'd like to say that. Now, Sri Chinmoy has graciously consented to play us a piece on the Esraj. What do you call this composition, sir?
This is just only a short piece. It is my own composition I'll be playing. Hilary, short. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to have a little bit more time to talk, but first of all, I want to tell everybody that Sri Chinmoy is going to be performing his music in concert at the North Shore Community Center, 236 Middle Neck Road in Great Neck, and it's going to be this evening. And tomorrow in Central Park, Sri Chinmoy and his disciples will be performing at five different park locations from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. And if you'd like some information, call 523-3471. That's the Sri Chinmoy Center information. We have about 2 minutes, and I'd like to ask you a little bit more about the Bhagavad Gita. Isn't it true that the Bhagavad Gita assumes the prospect of eternal war? It's just going to keep on going, this huge war in creation.
It is an inner conflict between man's higher realities and lower realities. So the lower realities in the beginning do not surrender to the higher realities. There comes a time when the lower realities see that the higher realities are not imposing anything on the lower realities. On the contrary, the higher realities are more than eager to house the lower realities and give them adequate compassion, love, and concern. So here, no imposition. The lower realities find it difficult to accept the higher realities, for they think that they will be crushed, they will be destroyed. But it is a deplorable mistake. The higher realities, on the contrary, will transform the lower realities. And when they're transformed, there will be no conflict between good and bad.
Okay, thank you very much, Sri Chinmoy. This has been The Absence of Silence, brought to you by Parks and Recreation. Matthew Parrish, your host. Good afternoon.
Thank you.